Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show today. I'm your host, Lee Bond. This is Radio Established to Address Life. We're going to get it in. A lot of stuff happening this week as per the norm, thank goodness. If weren't, then we wouldn't have a damn thing to talk about. But we got some stuff to talk about. Tuesday was a big election day. Want to go over some of the results from that. Not going to really get into detail about the events that happened during the week in Vegas. As you all know, went out there to participate in the National Association of Black Journalists Conference and just say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Let's just leave it at that. You know, some things we'll talk about, but most of it we won't. I'm just not going to do that. God stay true to the rules. But we walk into this weekend, hot, humid. I don't know where you are, but it dang sure is like that on the East Coast. But I wanted to really talk about some margins, if you will. Yeah. We often have conversations, and in those conversations, everyday conversations with people, right? You say, hey, you give them something, and they say, yeah, but sometimes. That is really rubbing. It's really rubbing me. I think even more so as I get older, because I think that people are using the sometimes as an excuse not to do the majority, not to do things the majority of the time. Now, there are times when it's going to prevent you from doing stuff. You know, sometimes you just ain't got it. I get that. But if you have the opportunity to move yourself forward, if you have an opportunity to help someone else move forward, then why allow the sometimes to get in your way? Do what you can do. Someone else will pick up the rest. God, woman, the creek don't rise. That's all we can hope for. You know, as we sat and talked after the day went on, we were discussing not only what we're doing now, but our future plans and what we want to do next with not only the show, but the entirety of the Speak Up Network and our own voices and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, one of the things that I mentioned was I have failed in not being able to find any young people as of yet to help pick up the banner and carry the charge. You know, I don't want to get into the mode of, well, some of the times I've asked people and I haven't gotten a good response or a solid response, I want to get to the portion of, you know, I've asked people and eventually I got a yes. So I'm not going to allow the sum of the time to derail that journey at all, because it's too big of a thing to allow that to happen, to be honest. And I say it's too big of a thing because he being gender neutral, I want, don't call me, text me, and hit me up on Instagram, engagement. He who controls or directs the narrative controls the narrative. And, you know, information is truly power. And though we have a good time and we try to keep it light and jovial, we also have a purpose, and that purpose is to gather and share relevant information. And I would be remiss to say, because Rashi would kill me if I didn't say, to get people to think about actionable ways that that information can be harnessed and utilized in order to affect change, right? So that is why I can't stop. That is why I won't stop. So we were talking, one of the things we were talking about is my plans. If you follow the show, I'm the one that's moving around the most. I'm here and there and there and here. This week, just got back from Vegas. Next week, going back to New York. We're doing another Black Wall Street presentation in Harlem on Friday. And then I come back to Baltimore, I want to say, Saturday, Sunday, some crap like that. And then I'm stable for a couple of weeks. But then I have some plans for my birthday that take me on another quick little trip and whatnot. And I'll share that as it becomes relevant, because I think I want to do something really special during that. The more I think about it, the more I'm pumped about doing something really special while I'm away. My birthday is the 9th of September. It's the same day as the month. No, I don't need, you know, the birthday, blah, blah. I don't need all that. I'm just saying that's what it is. And Rodney's is the 1st of September. So it's fairly easy to remember ours, because he begins the month and mine is the same day of the month. So, but I want to do something pretty special while I'm away this go around. Something that I thought about doing last time, but I didn't feel like I had the right connects in place in order to make it happen last go around. So God willing, the creek don't rise, things will fall into place. Matter of fact, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to start making those things happen. I'm going to start connecting some dots and making some stuff happen so that I can do something extremely special this go around. Rodney, good morning. How you doing, brother?
Good morning, brother. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. You said they had a postpone the interview, huh?
Well, I postponed it just in case.
Okay, gotcha.
So we're going to meet, if everything goes well, we'll meet this coming Thursday.
Gotcha. So what you all don't know about, again, we're always working in behind the scenes. So Rodney was actually supposed to be followed today by a local newspaper to interview him during the show this morning. And as you just said, that was postponed. And that's okay. You know, hopefully we can pick that up next week and move on with that. But again, we ain't stopping, family. This thing is moving full bore, and all the engines are turned up and we cranking out. Speaking of, tomorrow actually is actually Purple Heart Day. Purple Heart Day was actually started by General George Washington. It was started back in 1782, and Purple Heart was originally known as the Badge of Military Merit. if you're not familiar with the U.S. military's Purple Heart, this is the highest honor bestowed upon those who are in service. It is usually awarded to those whom, well, not usually, it always is awarded to those whom go way above and beyond in the sight, in the face of death, near death, or death, to not only secure themselves, but also to save others and or property. And it's a testament to their grit, to their will, and their pledge to their fellow soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen. What are you calling them? Space cadets? I don't even know what the hell you call these new people. Like, space cadets? What are these people? You know what the...
They're guardians.
The U.S. Space Force. Oh, my God. Guardians of the galaxy. I'm going to throw the hell up. Okay, whatever. Guardians. Whatever. I actually saw somebody in the Space Force uniform. They were actually finishing in the... Like, wow. It blew my mind. You know, look. I understand things change, and I'm not the dude that's like, oh, it's just doesn't fit, whatever. But, you know, that was hilarious. Seeing them, hilarious. Absolutely flipping hilarious to me. So I just said, oh, Brother Barry's on. What's up, Thomas? Good morning, bro. If you want to get in, hit the number one, I'll bring you up. If not, just continue to listen. But, I'm sorry, y'all. If you ever want to speak, you know, we don't say that as often as we used to. If you ever want to speak, hit the number one on your keypad. That indicates to me, to us, that you want to say something, and we'll bring you up at that point. I apologize. We don't say that as often as we used to. We got to get back to that. But, you know, some of this stuff is automatic at this point. You know what I mean? In our heads, it's like automatic. So it will slide by every now and again. But, okay, anyhow, that is the history of Purple Heart Day and the meaning of the Purple Heart. And if you don't know, I will remind you that we have a Purple Heart recipient in Rodney Smith. You know, Sergeant Smith showed credit upon himself in the United States Air Force during the attack on Cobalt Towers and Cobalt Towers. And it's a harrowing story, you know, one of the things that you pick up being with Rodney, or just in his presence, is he's very humble. And it's, oh, you know, just a thing that I did. Okay, dude, like, that's a thing that you did. One day you woke up, I think I'm going to save about 15 people today. You know, after that, I think I'll get lunch. Like, no, Rodney, that was a huge deal, bro. Like, you don't just brush that up. This thing I did that one day, you know, one time I was, you know, at band camp, you know, I decided to do this thing over here, and, you know, almost lost my life too, but yeah, so piggy, everything's good. Like, okay, dude, whatever. So we're at the range Thursday, wasn't it, Rodney? Thursday night. We're at the range Thursday
yep.
night, and quite a few people were walking up saying, man, thank you. And I'm standing back. Not just to be out of the way, but I'm standing back as an observer, and, you know, right? Oh, man, not a big deal. Dude, you are, oh, my goodness. Humility, boy, I tell you, it's a beautiful thing. It really is a beautiful thing. But, yeah, so, Rodney, a lot to get to, man. We were talking about this in the car. So, Alex Jones was hit over the head and in the pockets a little bit for his fake news about the Sandy Hook massacre. Now, Alex Jones, if you're not familiar, is the founder of InfoWars. Now, this cat has been pumping for years that the assault on Sandy Hook and the killing of those children was fake news. That was his stance, basically. He's like, never happened. It was all a hoax. Well, the family sued for $150 million. Right, and they were awarded $4.1 million in compensatory damages, and then they just hit them over the head the very next day with $45.2 million in punitive damage. So they didn't get the $150, but they got dang near $50, and there could be additional monies awarded because the case still is, in a way, ongoing. Now, the thing about this, right, and this is what we were talking about in the car, like, this cat was making dang near $1 million a day pushing his quote-unquote news. He was making almost $1 million a day pushing those falsehoods. And to Rodney's point, he's like, yo, if you're making dang near $1 million a day pushing, what do you call it, Rodney, bovine
defecation.
Right, you're making $1 million a day pushing bovine defecation. What's the motivation for you to stop? I mean, that's an honest question. If you know you, it's a hustle. It's like any other hustle. So you're making dang near $1 million on the corner. What's going to motivate you to stop? Prison? No, it's going to deter you for that moment, but it's not going to motivate you to stop. If you're making dang near $1 million a day, are you serious? That's really going to motivate you to stop? The threat of you going to prison? The only threat that pretty much is going to motivate you to stop is death. But hell, even that, if you can make $1 million a day, is that really going to motivate you to stop? Honestly, just think, if you get through a year, at $1 million a day a year, and let's just say at the end of that year, you so expire. You have put your family in a position to live for the rest of their daggone lives without pretty much lifting a finger. How is that really going to deter you from doing what you do? It's no different. I see no separation between them. Brother Barry, do you see a separation between the two?
No, I don't, but I do see the trend in American online behavior because most people are attracted to gossip and fake news. Unsubstantiated information is almost like gold these days.
And the more sensationalized it is, the more people to the, I guess I parallel that to these reality television shows. If you put solid programming, solid meaning, you know, upstanding families, situation, I'm thinking about, what's the thing, Everybody Loves Raymond. If you put an Everybody Loves Raymond type situation, or even the Upshaw, okay, let's say the Upshaw. Everybody Loves Raymond / the Upshaw, either one doesn't matter, against a real whatever, housewives, husband, married to something or another, those shows are going to thrash the Upshaws and or Everybody Loves Raymond. Just smoke them. Absolute smoke. People are going to talk about it more. People are going to remember it more. People are going to follow the characters, the people that play the characters more. Because even these reality television shows, people, they're characters. You know, there's a whole lot of liquor and messy I can't even get it out of my daggone mouth. Editing to make people on edge or keep mess flipping around time and time again. Now, you all know I love Maury. I love Maury, me and Maury. We like this run. We like this, but Maury's off TV now, so I got to go to paternity court. And I will watch paternity court like it's the result of the lottery when it's $1 million. I will sit there on pins and needles trying to find out if that's the fall. You know you're the fall. That is my vice. Not even going to lie. I will take it on the chin. That's my thing. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's I don't know why. I just love that little. But that's my little sliver. That's it. The rest of the crap that I watch on television isn't crap, in my opinion. I love to watch the home improvement shows. I love to watch Turner Classic movies and the news. You put those in front. Well, you know, including sports. Thank God football's back. You put those things in front of me, and I'm a happy camper. The fixation on this sensationalism is detrimental for the advancement of our society. But we stay hooked. We stay hooked week in, week out, day in and day out. It's a drug. Are we missing something, Rodney? You think that most people are missing something? And I wouldn't say most. I would say some. Let's stay in the margins with that. Some people are missing something, so they turn to this trash in order to fill the gap or the void.
No, people aren't missing anything. But Lee, when you mentioned it being a drug, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head there, because you know social scientists know that the level of endorphins and the same way your brain reacts to some of these sensational wives and basketball and whatever the show's titles are, it has the same effect as if you were taking a hit off the pipe. So, you know, the hypothalamus and hippocampus regions of the brain, they all fire the same. But the worst part is not just that they fire the same and send off those feel-good endorphins, but they also need more the next time. It works very much. It is a form of accepted addiction.
Visual drug. You know the number one drug in America right now is
sugar?
Fentanyl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And fentanyl is 1,000 times more addictive than heroin. And fentanyl also gives a dopamine high. And all of this is about dopamine. This is all about dopamine. It's all about whatever those desires that you got in your head. That's what Alex Jones and reality TV and, you know, these conveyors of non-truth, that's what they got to deliver. You know, you would think that if you had black folks like you got on these reality TV shows who had millions of dollars, that the average black millionaire and his wife would have much more to do than sit around and gossip and get into quarrels with other black millionaires, right? You know, like you would just
say that again.
You know, that even if we go to the black Italian families, right, these mobsters' wives or whatever they had, you would think that they would have something more to do with the power, even if it's from illegal gain, that they just wouldn't sit up gossiping and running their mouths, right? Who builds the empire that way, right, with the messiness and the constant, you know, garage and what have you. But what that does is it makes the average person believe that these people are just like me. And that is a part of the law. That is a part of why people like the sensationalism. That's why people like the Alex Jones of the world. Because Alex Jones, he feeds into, and listen, man, I love conspiracy theories. I consider myself, you know, I'm a new age type of guy. You catch me in the bookstore, I might either be in the history section or the new age section, okay? But the Alex Jones in the world, they have, in my humble opinion, they've learned since the invention of getting these ad dollars that you can be more sensational. You can do what he did with Sandy Hook, and Sandy Hook wasn't the only play that he's did that. He's done that at a couple mass shootings where he said it wasn't real, okay? And, if I'm not mistaken, I believe in 9/11, he was saying that those people didn't die in those planes either. So that wasn't his first time doing that. It's just now, because things are so frequent, you know, that these guys are saying it more. I am happy that these families got their justice, though, because I do believe that that's harmful news. I do believe you have to be culpable or responsible for what comes out of your mouth if you got a platform. You have to own that. And if you can't own it, don't do it.
Speaking of, I want to go back to Tuesday because Tuesday was a powerful day. Speaking of ownership, and if you can't, don't. So we had a number of states go out and vote, Kansas being the first. I'll start with Kansas. Voters defeated a measure that would have allowed the GOP-led legislature to impose new restrictions on abortion rights. That was a huge thermometer test, I think, for the nation. Here you are having pretty much middle America reject the Supreme Court's decision to allow the states to determine what abortion rights should or should not be for women as within their boundaries. And Kansas said, well, you know, we agree with the things should have stayed as they were, but the federal mandate that women should have the right to choose. Now, I don't understand the rush to strip women of that right to choose. It doesn't mean that, you know, everybody's going to go out here and get a dag on abortion. I just think that it gives people the necessary flexibility to do what they feel is right for themselves and their families. But, you know, that's for another time. We really have to do a show about that. I mean, I really need to get with some folks, male and female. I was thinking about that this morning. Really need to get with some brothers too, whom have had to be on the side of sitting with their significant other as they made that decision, and see how it impacted them. Because I think that's a fair enough assessment. You know what I'm saying? I think that's a fair question to ask of people. How did it, if it did impact you at all, and would you do it again? You know, not to be disgraceful of folks, not to beat them over the head or anything like that. Just if this is a decision that you made, why did you make the decision? Is it a decision that you would make again? Because I think that we all may feel some remorse later on in life if in fact, we did make the choice, and then some people are not. So I shouldn't say we all. Some people feel remorse later on, and some people won't. So I think that would be a worthy topic, to be honest with you. What do you all think about that?
I think that that's a good topic. I just think that my humble opinion about it is that, you know, it is one of those topics, honestly, where I hope that we can start letting people have their say without doing what white folks do and shaming people.
Right.
Because
right.
I feel like that's why a lot of the conversations don't take place. You know, people don't want, men don't want to talk about it because the reality, men don't want to admit that when they can't afford something. And a child is something that you have to be out of, you can or you can't afford. You can hit people with morality all you want to, but if you ain't going to help them take care of those children, it don't matter. You can say use contraceptives. Well, hey, who ain't used a condom and the condom ain't busted? Who ain't been on the pill and the pill didn't work? They got the shot and the shot.
Right.
I see a child every day that I know is a child that the mother had, one of those shots in the arms, what have you, that's supposed to be 99% effective. That was that 1% was her child. Her child was that 1%, right? And so, you know, when you start asking people who are trying to protect themselves, and then we start trying to put the morality, well, you're going to have sex, this with you, that ain't how that works, brother, sister. You want to know why these folks are going to shooting up things? Most of them are sexually deprived. That's why they're shooting up shit now. But we don't want to talk about that because our morality piece, and that's what we're good at now. We're good at talking about why somebody should do something that they shouldn't do. But I say that to say we need to have honest conversations. And my last point about abortion that I honestly believe, if you take finances out of it, and I'm all about women having the right for their bodies, but I agree with Dave Chappelle. I do believe that it should be a two-party street. I think that that should be something that two people agree upon, because if you're not going to be able to take care of this child by yourself, and I know people are always going to go back and say what a father should be doing, but I'm always reminded that these folks go to clinics all the time without fathers present now. And they get themselves inseminated. and ain't nobody looking for the sperm donor. They all call them sperm donors, right? And so I feel like if we're saying we're changing as a society as whole, well, let's change all the way then. If we change, well, let's change all the way because that's what y'all are saying. You want to write. So I think once you get to that point, I think we will see change in behavior. But I also believe that it's just a tool. It's not a tool that should be used as birth control, in my humble opinion. But I do believe if you know that this child is going to be brought into this world with some deformities and some things that may harm this child in the long run, I think those two parents should be able to make an educated decision on what they should do.
Speaking of the financial part, though, you know, it's a brother was saying, he asked the question of a lady who said, so if you feel that it's a man's responsibility to provide for a child, why does the man have no say-so in the development of child? Speaking to your point, Dave Chappelle's point, you know, and so you can force me to pay, but I have no say in either this child coming or not coming into the world. Like, how does that work? How does that work? Mm-hmm. I see your point. I see your point. I lost where I wanted to go, so I'll continue on the path that I was going. Let's go to Michigan for a second. In Michigan, one of the 10 House Republicans that voted to impeach Trump was voted out. He lost his re-election bid to come back to the U.S., the House of Representatives. Now, we all knew that some people were going to fall on this wall. We are at an extreme level on, I must say on, but in a lot of circles in this country, and pop in the political realm is one of those realms where it's really, really, really getting to, you're either far right or far left. The middle is eroding, unfortunately, and a lot of people used to reside in the middle. And this is where, Rodden, your stance on nonpartisans or independents, depending on where you live at in the nation, this is where they come into play. But I don't think the ship is getting bigger for them. I think the ship is getting smaller for them with respect to that voting block. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that voting block is as powerful as it could be because the people on the other sides are really showing up and showing out. Do you disagree with that, Rodden?
So I think that the nation politically is in flux right now, and the nation obviously it has been at this point previously. Like, we no longer have the Whigs, we have the Democrats, right? We have the Republican Party instead of the Democratic Republican Party. So the country is in flux, and I like to use the analogy is that the country is going through birthing pains right now. And really, since the election of Ronald Reagan, the country has gone through a long, torturous pregnancy. And Donald Trump was towards the end of that pregnancy. And so now we are about to give probably the second. And we're on the cusp of birthing whatever this new thing is going to be. And so when people tell me that they're fed up, they're tired, they're not going to get involved, I say, no, this is the time where you need to be involved, because when this baby comes out, it's going to be what we form it to be. And so we better be in that process of forming it, because if we leave a void, then what happens in nature will happen with this, the most vilest white supremacist hate, racism, and all of that will be the embodiment of this new life that we are about to create. So this is a time when people need to get involved with politics. And I don't mean just going out and voting. That's huge. But you have to shape that vote is going to mean. You have to shape those people that you're going to elect. And before people run for office, you have to shape those people. And And before you can do any of that, we have to know what it is that we want, and in as much of a concerted effort as possible, you know, sort of clench those fingers into that fist and punch through this. Otherwise, if black people desert the system, I believe that we talked about the name of the Space Force earlier was the Guardian, and that was pushed a bit by the ex-president who created the Space Force. Well, remember in The Handmaid's Tale that the name of sort of the police were the Guardians. So could be a coincidence, maybe not, that I don't know. But there's a whole lot of things in The Handmaid's Tale that instead of looking like she was writing fiction, it almost looks like she was writing the reality of today.
You keep talking about The Handmaid's Tale. I have never read that. I really think I'm going to have to pick it up and read the book and also watch the series. Is it really that good, Rodney?
The book is talking about us, but using white people. And so for me, one of the things that stand out about her, she's actually researched history and what's happened throughout history. So a lot of the things that you see in the movie and that you read in the book, if you are aware of history, you can almost pinpoint which group she's talking about and what period she's talking about. And you'll see the Jews, yes, but you'll see a large proportion of it really is black people with white faces. Why that is so important to me is because for years, I've been telling white people that they are blessed to have black people as a canary in the coal mine, because whatever happens negatively to us is something that eventually will happen negatively to them if they do not help fix us or don't do these things to harm us in the first place. Historically speaking, it has always come back to them. I think it was Reverend Wright, and he said the chicken's coming home to roost. Well, right now, whether you're talking crack cocaine, and now we have opioid and fentanyl, but they didn't want to do anything with the crack cocaine epidemic or even call it an epidemic because it involved what they perceived to be black people, and they set up the laws to punish black people more. If you think about it, even this talk about banning assault weapons is based in racism, because when during the crack epidemic and black children were shooting each other in the streets, it was those horrible criminals, those depraved, morally depraved individuals. There was no talk about banning assault weapons. Now that white people, because you know it was black on black crime, right, that false narrative, but now with these mass shootings in general, are white people killing majority white people, but also everybody else? And because it's white people killing white people, just like the opioid is an epidemic now, well, these mass shooters are an epidemic that has gone so far as to want them to do one of the toughest things in politics, and that's ban weapons. But here's the thing, Lee. We don't have many guns, whether legal or otherwise, compared to white people, and especially these crazies. So if they were to ban guns, which I think is racist in nature, whether they admit it or not, then that means that all of the crazies get the guns, and we have to depend on the police, who we don't know which is worse, dealing with whatever the criminality is on the streets or calling the police.
And you're right about the guns. I mean, we saw that on the range, you know what I mean? Yeah, we got a couple, but there was a whole lot. I think I saw one dude.
Can I chime in?
With a wheelbarrow. Yeah, go ahead, bro.
But I always say that our problem in our community is our push for politics is that we individualize politics. And politics is much about family and community than anything else. And that's our problem. This idea that
how do you mean we individualize it? I'm confused by that.
Well, what I mean by that is when Hillary Clinton doesn't win, It's because the black males didn't vote. Black women did their job. When this doesn't happen or that doesn't happen, we poor black people ain't getting out and vote. And you see these poor Negroes, they always want something. They always this, they always that, right? And so, you know, you just get that a lot. And we're always pointing the finger. Black folks is not the whipping child for white folks or anything. White supremacy exists because white folks wanted to exist. And a lot of the burden of this country still falls on the shoulder of black folks who get the lease. Now, in my state, in the past 5 to 10 years, the Hmong community, who never wanted to participate in politics, are now participating in politics. But they have their family structure in place. They have their business structures in place. They have their educational structures in place, all funded with their own dollars. They also have their own community center that's funded by the businesses that they created. Now, I keep on explaining to people every time I talk to them, I say, well, we always are trying to do what white folks do, except what white folks have done institutional-wise, right? We have to create institutions. We have to create businesses. We have to create industries that are powered by us that we support with no excuse. We have to buy our own food. We have to stop being so critical of one another when we're doing business with each other and keep putting those dollars into our businesses. Can we stop going to their malls and shop at our own stores? Can we stop going to their restaurants? I go into soul food restaurants, and it's hard to go into a soul food restaurant and see a bunch of white folks and little black people there. But I can go into a white-owned restaurant and establishment, and I can see more black folks than white people in it. We're going to support, we'll go buy Chinese food or Mexican food or even food from brothers and sisters from the continent. But do any of these groups support us? And then that tails right back to where we at on the political side. It's not about an individual thing. Your vote is supposed to be weaponized as a collective unit. What are the goals and the tasks that we want as a unit? And we have to be so say one, so say we all. We have to stop being so scared to do that. That is our problem, because we vote willy-nilly. We vote because this sister was in the sorority. We vote because this is the first African-American president. We vote because we want this, that, and it. And they get us with these trinkets, and then collectively we get nothing for it. Yes, it may help the sorority of that, who that sister ordered, the Divine Nine, but how does that help the rest of black America, right? We have to start thinking about it outside of the individual bases or the individual groups. It has to be a collective thing. How does it benefit black men, women, and children as a family, right? How does that help our families get better? One last point. In 1965, Lyndon B. Johnson gave a speech at Howard University. In that speech, he was talking about how black folks were closing the gap. He even talked about at that point black women were making more money on average than white women were, right? In 1965. Today, the roles are reversed. We have less two-parent households. Black women make less than white women. But somehow, some way, we're being told constantly that black women are making gains based off of their political involvement. The data does not say such. Matter of fact, they're saying by 2035, the average median household income for African Americans will be zero. How can you be at a gain but you're netting zero? So we have to talk about that on a political level to say, hey, if that's where they're saying the trend is going, who are we going to vote for that's going to pull us out of this? No matter what the color of creed is, what is the policies and the politics? How are they going to impact the family structure?
I know that I have remained an independent nonpartisan for that very reason, because I came to an understanding some years ago that towing the party line was not getting me where I wanted to be. It wasn't getting us where I thought we would be. So I was more than willing to step away from that party line. That party line in my lifetime was Democratic. To then look at other folks and say, yo, look, I don't care who you are. I need to make sure that me and mine are taken care of. So if you're willing to invest in me and mine, then we can do some things together. And in the state of Maryland, I have voted for our Republican governor, just like I voted for our Democratic governor. I did not vote for O'Malley because he was a clown. That was our last Democratic governor, actually. I did vote for Hogan both times he's run because I thought that he has continued to do good things for the state, but I know personally that he's done great things for the community. I'm looking forward to this election and still waiting to hear what I need to hear from candidates on both sides of the fence before I cast that final vote. You know, the general election is coming up pretty soon, and we'll make the decision at that time. Speaking of, I wanted to recap on that. The primary friend of the show, Deron Trost, did qualify for the primary in Charles County, Maryland, so he will move forward. I'm sorry, the general in Charles County, Maryland, so he will move forward to that election, and hopefully he'll be chosen as the representative for District 3, the school board District 3 down there in Charles County, Maryland, so congratulations to him. Sister Angela Jeter did very well for her first time out the gate in South Carolina. She did not qualify to move forward, but she did very well for herself. Again, first time out the gate, she came in second place. That's awesome for someone with pretty much no name recognition whatsoever. So I'm looking forward to her and her next endeavor down in the state of South Carolina. But I wanted to do that quick recap. I wanted to continue on to Missouri, because, and I was hoping Roshi was going to be on, but she informed that she had some things popped up. But Missouri was the tale of two Erics. Your boy 45 sent out a generic message. I said your boy Rodney. I know. But he sent out a generic message supporting Eric in the election. Now, there were two Erics in this election. This is how gangster this fool was. So there was Eric, I want to say his name is Grittens, who was the former governor, and Eric Schmidt, who was the attorney general for the state. Eric Schmidt came out on top. The former governor, who resigned in 2018 due to a sex scandal and accusations of campaign misconduct, along with accusations of spousal, did not win at all. But again, Trump played this fence so damn tight that he just sent out his support for Eric, never naming a last name at all. I think he was concerned that he would lose. He would pick the wrong horse in that race, so he decided to thread the needle down the middle. All in all, though, what we saw on Tuesday was a continual divide in the nation. As going back to Michigan, Tudor Dixon picked up the endorsement. Tudor is backed by Trump, the Republican establishment, and is bankrolled by former Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos' family. Now, I think Michigan is going to be an interesting case for the nation. You know, Michigan took a hard look on during the coronavirus pandemic. The governor there, Democrat, used they've gone between Democrats, Republicans. Well, she took the party line and was very strong in the enforcement of face mask rules, so on and so forth. Why are we still debating this? I mean, do we not understand that masks actually save more lives than not having them at all? Do people really believe that a good majority of them would still be alive had face masks not been implemented? Are we really that arrogant and ignorant as a nation? Rodney, I'm going to start with you, man, because Vegas is off the chain.
So, Lee, this is an easy one. Yes, there's your answer. As a matter of fact, I'll go so much further is that now that monkeypox has been deemed this national emergency, you know, let's hope that they don't make the same mistake with monkeypox that they did with AIDS, which actually wasn't a mistake. It was purposely done. It just didn't work out the way that they thought. And that goes back to my point earlier, is when you allow one to suffer because we're so interconnected, ultimately it leads to others, if not all of us in general, suffering. So we see what happened with COVID and how many Americans died and the fact that it's still going on. And it's still going on not only here, but in the world, largely because of the United States' lack of response. And it's hard to catch up with a virus once it's out into the wild. And now we have monkeypox. I've said for ever since we got COVID is that if an enemy, whichever terrorist group, and we just popped another terrorist this week, but whatever terrorist group, whether in this country, which is something that we need to look out for more, or someone from outside of this country, one of the easiest, least expensive, and most effective ways to kill Americans is to introduce some type of virus, some type of sickness, because so many Americans, primarily white Americans, white supremacists, conservatives, not wholly, but in large parts, they will refuse to wear the things that will protect them and protect others in their selfishness and their delusion, and we all pay. So there is no us and them when it comes to these things because it always affects us all, and typically it is black people that take the brunt of it along with our Native American brothers and sisters.
So, Brother Barry, how horrible was it up there in the Great White North?
Some of monkeypox?
No, I'm talking about the whole
mask.
The whole mask. Yeah, the mask. Mm-hmm.
So up here in Minnesota, we have a gazillion medical industries, and as you know, we have the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And so medicine here is pretty strong. People were pretty good with the mask mandates. But the problem with that, brother, is still people in this country don't like themselves. And so some of these folks, brother, can't sit at home long enough by themselves to not transfer. Because, yeah, the mask can help, but also the touching, the kissing, the other stuff. You know, you can transfer COVID or monkeypox that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the clubs kept going. You know, nobody wants to tell the clubs that you may need to shut it down. Nobody wants to say that to the bars. Nobody wants to say, hey, you know what, it sucks, but for the next 60 days, you know, the government will have to cut a check to these restaurants, but the restaurants need to stay closed until we eradicate this. I've always said that about COVID. We just needed to shut everything down, and we should have forced people to suffer with their family. That's just my belief.
You decided to have them.
You know, I mean, listen, them your kids, right?
Right.
Why,
that's
why
your
can't
wife.
You sit at home
that's
with
yours.
Your kids? Well, that's right. Your wife, right? And so we have that now to the monkeypox situation. That's interesting. And I'm worried that we're so politically sensitive that folks are scared to have the true conversation. Our brother Rodney brought up AIDS, and I'm glad that he did, because bathhouses are back open. We're having more bathhouses happening in this country. And bathhouses seem to store. Huh?
Bathhouses?
Bathhouses, yeah. That's how HIV got spread in the 80s. Pretty much incubated
for
what gay men were having.
Yeah, you putting it down. I never.
Say, brother?
Really, you're putting it down on me. I never heard of, I mean, I'm obviously through, you know, ancient times I heard of bathhouses, but a common bathhouse, no.
Oh, man, they're bad. And gay men are frequenting them more. 98% of these monkeypox cases are from gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they say that 2%. Now, Brother Rodney said something about intermingling, and I want to make sure that your listeners understand what I'm saying, so I don't want to make it seem like it's just gay men or people who classify themselves as gay men. Because there's another section of our population, some of these young ladies, who actually will sleep with gay men. They just released a clinic here, just released a statement, and they said, no, you cannot get monkeypox because you exchange money with someone. That is false. And I said, I'm glad somebody finally told the truth. The truth of the matter is it wasn't because she was exchanging money. It's because she has a lover that's gay. We don't want to tell the truth. We got some of these lifestyles that people are exhibiting that are costing them, and we don't want to say, hold up. I know, you know, you're about the sexual revolution and the whole nine, but hey, you're taking a risk right now. This is
a greater
behavior.
Risk. Right.
But we want to say to be politically correct, you know, to be politically correct, we want to say consistently that it's everyone. Well, if 98%, Brother Lee, is the gay and bisexual male, I would say that those brothers and sisters who frequent with them should be told that they are at risk and that they should be a little bit more culpable. They should be a little bit more responsible if they do have those sores or what have you. And it's okay by saying these are where we're getting cases from and really just giving scientific fact, right? Because scientific fact mm-hmm. can be just scientific fact. It's not rooted in discrimination. It's not rooted in hate. If that's what the science is telling you, that 98% comes from a particular group, right? You're not targeting that group by saying, hey, you have to be careful of how you're moving because these cases, 98% of these cases is coming from this particular group, right? Be careful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even saying it's a gay disease. It just so happens at this particular time with this is who they're finding it in.
Being too sensitive about a situation that can kill hundreds, if not thousands, of people is not the move to make. Like, yeah, I would rather you be pissed off than to be dead. In all honesty, I would much rather you be pissed off than for you to be dead. You know, for you to kill me, for you to kill my loved ones, so on and so forth. I'd much rather you be in an emotional state in which you don't agree with me, whatever that may look like. Then again, either of us or both of us being put 6 feet under because I didn't want to hurt your feelings. I would much rather hurt your feelings and you be alive than us be dead, but your feelings still be intact. Because actually, at that point, you wouldn't have any feelings, then, would you? That just don't make no sense to me.
Brother Rodney, what do you think about that? About the numbers and what the numbers are saying in response to how the information is being pushed out.
I mean, the numbers are typically the way that they always are. It's unfortunately with a political bent for whatever ideology that's pushing those numbers. Remember when Hurricane Katrina was assigned by God to punish the lasciviousness and debauchery of Louisiana and Mississippi? So it really just depends, you know. And now they never talk about.
And it was some debauchery in New Orleans.
Yeah, but they never talk about all of those so-called Christians who would go down there and participate in that lasciviousness and debauchery. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I'm a big fan of Dr. Fauci because so far he's proven to be truthful, and his predictions are unfortunately coming true, because remember at the beginning of the pandemic of the COVID-19 Trump virus pandemic, the thing that he said was this could be into the millions. He said that. And how many people have we had that have died of COVID-19 in this country so far? So we won't, because of the politics. And that's actually what the article was going to be. And that politics And white people say, why do y'all always talk about race? It's because white supremacy is killing us all, primarily black people, minorities, and others, but it's also killing white people. And when your sickness is so pervasive that you're willing to kill your own progeny, because you remember the guy in Texas that said it was like an honor as a grandparent to die of COVID-19 instead of wearing a mask, that crazy talk. And so I'm a big believer in the science, and let's get to the truth of the matter. Viruses have worked the same way ever since Africans discovered the cure to smallpox. It has not changed. The only thing that's changed is you think about in modern times, the largest killer of Americans in American history has not been all of its wars put together, minus the Civil War, with the Civil War being the most deaths in any war. But it was actually the influenza outbreak in the early 1900s that was the biggest killer in America. Well, we, and I haven't looked at the numbers in a while, but I believe COVID-19 Trump virus is now the biggest killer of Americans in its history as a country and before. That is huge. That is huge in modern times. And we have multiple vaccines that the government was even giving away. And if you look at the history of the influenza outbreak in the early 1900s, the easy lesson that was learned was shut down military movement, because many people believe that what's called the Spanish flu actually started in Kansas, of all places, and it was military movement that spread it across the country and ultimately throughout the world. And the military learned that lesson. They shut it down. As a matter of fact, there are people who were deployed and were supposed to come back home, and they got that. Unfortunately, your deployment has been extended indefinitely due to the COVID-19 Trump virus pandemic. They didn't say Trump virus because, you know, the president's in charge of the military, so they had to put it nice. But that's what happened. And they did it quick, fast, and in a hurry. And then Dr. Fauci basically told us, yeah, you need to shut down businesses. You need to stop going in public places. You need to stay home as much as possible. You need to wash your hands. Like, you know, all the people that you see in the restroom that go and do their business and walk out without washing their hands. So we know there's filthy, nasty people out there on a daily basis. And that didn't stop with COVID-19. So what I believe for this monkeypox or whatever comes next, if I was 45's homie, Putin, I would make sure I sent people, you know, let's check out Brittany Griner real good before she comes back and make sure he didn't shoot her up with nothing. And the other fella that they're negotiating to bring back, I think he's a Marine. Let's make sure that they're good, because, you know, terrorists watch how stupid Americans are. And when they find that, and I'm sorry, I used the S word, terrorists watch how irresponsible Americans can be, usually associated with race and religion and then politics, and they capitalize on it. And I expect these viruses to be no different.
Brittany Griner. I was just told earlier today by my son that they want to get a person, a Russian man who killed Czechoslovakian official in broad daylight. They want him to be released in exchange for Brittany. And then I was reminded that the Merchant of Death, they want him too for Brittany. And once again, I'm thinking straight political. This is not with my heart. This is not me being, you know, because I love black folks, and I know she black. But I have to ask the question, is Brittany Griner worth those two murderers being put back on the streets?
So Brother Barry, this is where I am with it. She's an American citizen, period. She's an American citizen. And I don't know whether what they're accusing her of is true, because it is in a judicial system that is run by one person, and that's Putin. It is the opposite of what we're supposed to be in this country, that we're trying to be currently in this country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for those who want to know what life will be like if we allowed to take over either House of Congress in 2022 with the SCOTUS already corrupt. If you want to see what it'll be like, that's what it will be like. It will be about people in power at a greater extent than they do now, putting people in jail, or I should say gulag, at a greater rate than ever before in the history of this country. That's what it will be like. So I don't know those things. Did she really have marijuana? Now, I don't know. Because if she did, and if she knew it, that she should not have that quantity or whatever it is, then I actually might have a different feeling about it. But I don't know that. And what I'm being told is it's a kangaroo court, and she's saying things just to survive right now. And that's the thing, when you put people on duress, it's hard to tell what is and what isn't. Because, you know, I told somebody, if you torture me, I'm going to tell you I shot Lincoln. Matter of fact, I got Lincoln and Kennedy with the same bullet. The magic bullet theory. All right,
Oliver Inspector.
Hey, brother, I've been through that training, and it was nothing nice. You know, that's why they tell us is if you break, choice what you do. We'd prefer you don't say anything, but you're all human. And, you know, I don't know if you remember in Iraq, they used to send you to the dental office with no anesthesia, and they'd get them pliers out and start yanking on your teeth. And I don't know if you ever had a tooth yanked out, not knocked out, but yanked out without anything to numb it. Brother, that's some pain you will never forget. So I don't know whether what she's saying is true, a lie, or what. That's up to our government to do. Once they've discerned that, if it comes out that she knowingly did it, and she was not under duress, she knowingly did it, I actually have no problem with her staying there and doing her 9 years. But what I think more than likely, but don't know, this is just an opinion, that these are, I'm going to use this phrase because I think it's fitting, these are trumped up charges. And if they're trumped up charges, right, she's saying what she needs to say to survive. And then we need to do whatever we need to do to bring her home. And I will even go to this extent, Brother Barry, because in the military, we say we don't leave nobody behind. And mm-hmm. I've seen people die trying to rescue other people. I think when it comes to our civilian sector, if a government falsely kidnaps, because that's what it becomes, is kidnaps one of ours, then I think it's very simple. Biden put on his aviator glasses, go to the podium, and tell Putin either you release her and the other fella if he's innocent, or you won't just have us sending minimal resources to Ukraine, but we're going to send the long-distance stuff that reaches into Russia. And then go, you make that choice. Either you release ours, period, with no trade, if it's falsely done, or the help that we've sent to Ukraine with the little stuff, and you see the damage it's doing, yeah, we're about to send some real good stuff over there. So you pick your poison.
Mm. Okay, I can see that. How about you, Brother Lee? What do you say?
Well, you know, I just got in on that. I got in on the, in the end of that, so I'll answer that real quick. You know, my point has always been, you know, I think she's the wrong color and wrong gender identification for this whole situation. In all honesty, I think that it's a situation of she's a black lesbian in Russia, and they ain't gonna have that. Period. You know what I'm saying? I think that she may have been over one too many times. She may have started generating some likes from people who started chit-chatting. It's like, yo, okay, we're not foolish. We know we have lesbians here, but we ain't about this. You get with a black lesbian, we ain't going to do that. So I think that's the bigger issue at hand. I don't disagree with Rodney said. Why give up anybody? You know what I'm saying? And I understand her family may feel a certain way. I dig it. You know what I'm saying? But when it comes to national security, that's not the way you want to go about doing things. You know what I'm saying? You want to make sure that we are always in the best possible position. And that best possible position is not giving up potential very good assets for a very good reason later on down the line. You know, so so yeah, you give them that other hand. That other hand is, yo, I get that. I appreciate how you come into the table. But just like Rodney said, you know them little things we gave? Remember, we didn't get a big package yet. Now, we can do this one or two ways. We can give them the big package, and you will have nothing, or you get nothing, and you still have nothing. Which way you want to go? Mm. So that's how I think about it, and I got to bow back out of here.
All right. So my two cents with it, Rodney, is this. Honestly, I was sitting there thinking about it, like, you know, if this was my daughter, what would I want? What would I want for my daughter, right? I would honestly want my daughter to be home. But then I'm thinking about what would make somebody like Brittany stay after, because other American athletes were there who play overseas, and they left. They left. They left soon as they were being told by the State Departments or the embassies in Russia to get out, because they knew that it was a chance that it was going to be conflict between the United States and between Russia, right? And so they got out. And she stuck around. And I'm almost wondering if she didn't stick around not because of basketball, but she stuck around because she got her another lover over there. Matters of heart. And you know how it is inside of Russia. And you know that in Russia, they deploy women as their top spies, not men. And how easy is it if they did plant it on you? How could they set you up to plant it on you, right? And she didn't move as if she was an American inside of Russia. She was moving as if she was Brittany Griner. And to me, I feel like that's another thing that needs to change when we travel abroad in this country. This goes back to the conversation we always have, Brother Rodney, about us being politically minded. If the United States is in conflict with Russia and you're an American in Russia, soon as it starts, what should you do, brother?
Oh, well, I know what I'm doing. It's not what I know what I'm doing.
Because if I was
like the movie, and there'll be no sunken place for me.
Right. Because if I was a blood and I know the Crips coming in shooting blood, guess what I'm doing if I see the Crips come in? I'm out. It's me. I'm gone. That's just common. That's like layman terms, right? It's about as lame as I can give it to you. And I say this to her because I know everybody's like, yo, she's a political prisoner. And then I'm like, but yo, if we give up the Merchant of Death for Brittany Griner, this man go out and he gets responsible for killing another 10, 20, 30, 40,000 people. What's Brittany's contribution to the country? What's she going to do? And there's been no conversation of saying to Americans, and this is where I wish that we were more like the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Well, when things happened, it was actual dialogue that had to be talked about beneath the surface. And the conversation is, hey, people are traveling more international. What do you do when the U.S. enters into a conflict with another country? How should you move if you are in those countries? You get what I'm saying? Because I don't think that this new crop of travelers, these new young people, I don't think, brothers, that they are aware of how they should be moving. And I don't think people who are really me-type people who are selfish, I don't think they get it. I don't.
So, Thomas, somebody, you know, we got listeners here in Vegas to the show, right? And someone just sent me a message that says, Brittany Griner, 31-year-old American, convicted of smuggling 0.7 grams of THC into Russia on a trip to play basketball for a Russian team, sentenced to 9 years and fined 1 million rubles in 2022, right? So that sets the stage. Mm-hmm. Aubrey Larber, 19-year-old American, twice, found guilty of smuggling 17 grams of THC into Russia while on a family vacation, released after a two-month detention and fined 15,000 rubles. And so I think that Putin, you know, the dude was a spy, and as far as I'm concerned, still is. That's his trade craft. He knew what was about to happen with the Ukraine, and he knew that where America stood, he didn't know how firmly America would stand, and I really believe he thought that he would just scoop up Ukraine in a matter of a few days, if not hours. And he got surprised. But in doing that, he also started looking at, hey, what can I get to use as leverage against those pesky Americans, since my guy is no longer in the White House? Since my guy is no longer in the White House. And so he started kidnapping people. And one of those people, I believe, is Brittany Griner. And so because I do believe that until it's proven otherwise, I think that, you know, the Secretary of State and the President, so far I think they've done the right thing. And I know it may not look like it. I'm sure if it was my daughter, I would be beating on their desk or as close as I could get to it, even if it was outside the fence, every day that I could afford to be in D.C., you know, ask them when my daughter's coming home. But at the same token, though, this is an example of that saddest thing of one person versus the other. So I say bring Brittany home. If she didn't really do it, bring her home. And because of this comparison right here, bring her home. Do I want to release the Merchant of Death for her? This is one of those things where I have to put the trust in. This is a hard thing for me to say. I got to put the trust in the State Department, the Defense Department, and the executive to make right decision.
I hear you, pretty much where I stand. And here's the thing: I'm not trying to put a value. I guess I am. I am in a sense. Saying I'm taking the emotion out of it, and I'm just talking logical, right, on a logical level. And I do like the comparison, but I also will point out to that listener that that was in a time where Trump was in office compared to a time where Biden is in office, and I always parallel Biden as he'll be the next Jimmy Carter. They're going to put him in so many international crises to make him look weak that – you know, this is no different than the Iran situation in 77. And so I'm just saying on a logical level, when there is a situation where the United States is in conflict with another country, are we really teaching these new crop of travelers who certainly travel more than our parents and grandparents have traveled abroad. Most black folks who traveled abroad in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, in the early 2000s, were mostly military or scholars. That wasn't an average thing to see black folks going on vacation internationally, right? But now since it's the new thing, Brother Rodney, on a political level, how she moved, was that politically smart? Because if these other players, male and female basketball players, are getting out of Russia, what made Brittany hold on to the last minute to leave?
So I think you make a good point in to why she was still there. The way she was at the baggage security check thing, she looked like to me she didn't have a care in the world. But, Thomas, I think that the other thing that this uncovers, though, is why would a 6'9" WNBA star, standout, figuratively and literally, why should she feel compelled to have to go and play basketball in Russia? And where I'm going with this is the finances. You know, there's that thing that says women in general get paid less than men, right? And then women of color get paid less than white women, who get paid less than white men. And the WNBA is no different. So, you know, the pursuit of money, you know, chasing that dollar can put you into position. And, of course, that's her choice whether she does it or not. But I say let's peel this onion a little bit and say, but why is this 6'9"? Is anybody else taller than her in the WNBA? I don't know. Maybe some of the listeners.
Oh, yeah. They definitely got taller. They definitely got taller women than her. But I would say this. So when we talk about why do they have to play overseas, my simple question is, and same can be said about Britney, three things. A, with Britney, I don't hear much from the LGBTQ community trying to talk about bring Britney home. I ain't seen the commercials. They got money. The second thing
she
I
is
black,
is
if we,
Thomas.
Hey, but she's still
black.
A part of that LGBTQ community. So where are they at? And I say that, brother, because, yeah, we can point out she's black, but when they have issues with our community, the first group of people that they send our way is black LGBTQ members to come tell us how homophobic black folks are. So
no doubt.
I just
no
want
doubt.
To ask.
And I'm,
right, so I want to
and I'm with
out.
You on that.
The second thing I want to say is women outnumber men in this country. Am I right? I just want to make sure my
yes,
numbers
sir.
Is correct. There's more women in this
women
country than men.
Outnumber men in the country, and black women outnumber black men in the United States of America.
All right. So that means that should be a big fan base for the WNBA. Women should buy more Brittany Griner tennis shoes and shirts and things of that nature so she could actually have more money in the United States. Men are not going to buy WNBA because the reason we watch and we support the NBA is because we want to see men who can do things that we can't do. The average man can go into a gym and shoot a jump shot and do a layup. He can't fly through the sky doing 360 dunks, windmills, and he cannot shoot as three-point shooters from half court like Steph Curry. Now, that's why we support the NBA. We don't support the big three like we support the NBA. And the reason why I bring that up is because I always hear, why are these women making less and these men are making more in the NBA? Well, it's because it's a national game, and nationally men are attracted to these amazing feats that these men do. If women supported the WNBA more and went out and actually bought tickets, you know, it's cheaper. I was saying this online. Right now, Chris Brown, the singer, is charging his fans $1,000 to take a picture with them. Well, it's cheaper to go to a WNBA game and sit on floor seats than it is to go to a Chris Brown concert. It's certainly cheaper to go to a WNBA game than it is to go to some of these Beyonce and Rihanna drag queen shows that the sisters support, whether they're gay or heterosexual. So if you want Brittany Griner and those others to not have to play in Russia, sisters need to go out, take their daughters, and support the WNBA. Now, let me caveat that with saying it was a story by a young lady who played for the Minnesota Lynx when they were winning their championships. She quit the WNBA. She was also engaged to Kevin Durant at one point. But she quit the WNBA for one reason and one reason only, Rodney. It was bullying. And she said she was being bullied because she was a heterosexual woman who was playing in the WNBA. And because she wasn't gay, she was called out of her name. She was threatened. It was all being said to her, not only in her locker room, but also on the court when she was playing against other players. Now, that should tell you why a lot of people really don't support the WNBA. And I'm done.
So the facts are the facts, and just like there's racism in general society, black people are treated in a racist manner in the LGBTQ plus community. That is the fact of the matter. And so black people don't get a break because they're a part of the LGBTQ plus community and they're going to rally around them. No, they treat black lesbians, black homosexual men, and every other letter that's a part of their community the same way that black people are treated out in general society. That does not change. We, you know, our color never gives us a pass when it comes to white supremacy and racism. It doesn't. And so I look at Brittany Griner as that's a black, I don't know, I think she identifies as a woman, but from what I see, that's a black woman right there. And she's still my sister, even though when she get with her own, she may not necessarily, and I don't know, see me as her brother, but she's still my sister, and our sister needs to come home. But yes, they are just the LGBTQ people that are white and otherwise are just as racist against black people in their community as general society is against black people. That's just the fact of the matter. So I'm still supporting my sister. And I'm going to go back to the pay. You remember the Clippers when they were on that long losing streak?
Mm-hmm.
And the owner of them, remember the dude that got the NAACP award, had, I think, Puerto Rican girlfriend that he had said, you know, there we go. And he said, you know, I don't really want to see you around all of them black guys or something to that effect. But he owned
Magic Johnson specifically.
Right. So you remember that? But they were a losing franchise. And that losing franchise made that Donald Sterling a billionaire, because he was not a billionaire until he bought the franchise. And most of his money came from that franchise, even though they were a losing team, right? Mm-hmm. So I look at that WNBA is – the WNBA, I believe, falls under the NBA. And they carried mm-hmm. a losing franchise for at least a decade. I forgot exactly how long the losing streak was for the Clippers. But they still carried them, and the team actually became more profitable. It didn't make a difference whether they lost a season or not. So that's one thing I think we should consider when we talk about the distribution of resources, in this case money. The other thing that I think is germane to this topic is, remember before they had the three-point line?
Mm-hmm.
Remember before they raised the height of the basketball goal? Remember how they changed the rules about being in the paint, right? Because they started getting people mm-hmm. like Will Chamberlain and Lou Alcindor, later Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They changed the game so much. And remember the time when Chamberlain scored 100 points?
Right.
They changed the rules because of us. And they always changed the rules because of us. And if you took a team of, you know, we just lost one of our luminaries in sports, civil rights, and especially basketball, the late, great Bill Russell, who was the civil rights icon.
I'm a Celtics fan, so I had to comment on that.
Oh, no, I appreciate you coming in, because I think we kind of let that one slip by, just like Nichelle Nichols from Star Trek theme, right? We got to recognize our greats. But my point is that if you took a team, the winningest team, whether it's the Celtics or the Lakers, if you put them against one of the teams today, there is no question about who's going to win, because of the athleticism of today, the training of today, the diet of today, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the NBA, I put into that, is that they are a fledgling organization that is on the come up, because, heck, we got a team here in Vegas now. So it's on the come up. And so I just want to make sure that when we think about it, that we're comparing apples and apples and not necessarily apples and oranges. And so if they can carry the Clippers for 12 years or 14, however many years it was, they can carry the NBA because their fan base is growing. And as their performance is improving, Thomas, I would rather go to a WNBA game today than to go to an NBA game, because I like seeing them on the come up.
Well, I would say that for people like yourself, then those are people who have to support the WNBA. But you're not going to get the average basketball fan, not no NBA fan, to go. And a lot of the money is TV revenue deals. That's how they're able to pay most of these players. That's where the billions come in at, because now they're sharing revenue. Donald Sterling wouldn't have – that franchise wouldn't be where it was at if it wasn't because of the collective sharing of revenue amongst the teams. It's like the Cowboys for the NFL. The Cowboys is the number one franchise in the world out of all sports, but they sell tickets. You put the Cowboys on TV, the ratings are going to be high. But if you put the Raiders on television, it may not be as high, right? But they still have to share that revenue nonetheless. And that's the problem. They haven't figured out a way to create rivals inside of the WNBA that are compelling, or even storylines inside of the WNBA to make them more watchable. And that's what sports is about. It's about storylines and competition. who is the competition? Who is your competitor? Who are the rivals? Is either rival teams or rival players? They have not been able to do it, so much so that the NCAA women's basketball is more popular than the WNBA, because we know that UConn is going to have a great team. We know that the University of Notre Dame is going to have a great women's basketball team. We know that, you know, there's going to be a plethora of other schools that they're going to be competing. The coaches compete against each other. So they already have those storylines already drawn, right? The WNBA has to find that. And that's been their struggle. Now, I go back to say, the revenue is how you make your money. LeBron James sells shoes not only in America but in China as well, right? So you have to be able to sell something. And I'm not trying to say that women shouldn't be paid equally, but it's one thing to say that, hey, it's one thing to say you should be getting paid when somebody else is getting paid and that person is bringing in more revenue than you. If I'm selling 100 times more tickets than you, why should you be making the same amount as me? If you're saying you want everything to be fair and you want to earn your way.
So, Thomas, one of the other things I wanted us to talk about, if we can get a chance, is the strategy, and this is back to a political topic, the strategy that some Democrats use to vote for Republicans so that on one hand, you had a group of Democrats who wanted to vote for the furthest far right candidate that they could so that that person would win in the hopes that they would be unacceptable in the general election. And maybe it might have had some merit, but you had another set of Democrats who took the different take on it, and they decided that they would try to vote for the least offensive Republican. And that way, if the Republican won in the general, that it would be a devil, but it wouldn't be a devil as bad as the devil that they could have had. And so I said, well, heck, if you got half doing one thing and half doing another, I don't know how that's going to work. But then just the thought, though, that people would go and vote for the worst possible devil and then expect that devil to lose in the general. I remember Hillary Clinton tried that strategy with a newcomer to politics, the former president, 45, and he wound up doing just what she wanted. He defeated the feel of some moderates and not so bad, lesser devils, I guess. But then he wound up defeating the Democrat. So I guess the question is, do you support that strategy? And, you know, in general, what's your thoughts on it?
Brother, I don't know why these are the crazy strategies that the Democrats are coming up with. I think the strategies get stranger and wilder each election. And the one thing that I've noticed that's happening in all of these, Brother Rodney, is that the Democratic candidates are worse as we go. I think that they should be trying to find more viable candidates to churn out versus trying to play politics with the Republican candidates or their races. That's one side of it. The other side of it, brother, is that the Democrats should have learned from the Blue Dog Democrats that you don't take the less of evil because they still can obstruct. Look at Manchin. Look at what happens with him. We've been down this road in this country before. The only thing that I would recommend that the Democrats do with their big tent ideas is that they have to understand that you're going to have to right some of the wrongs of the past, and you're going to have to stop being so extreme for everything. You're going to have to do things. The Democrats are going to have to be if they want to win it and be consistent, you have to be the parent of the country. You make the tough decisions, and you talk to everyone justly. But the idea of thinking you can somehow deal with the extreme, get that person in and think they're not going to lose. Hey, that crowd likes red meat. So if you feed them red meat, they going to eat. That's how you got Trump. It doesn't work. But if you think you're going to get this person who you feel like, well, hey, they're the lesser of two evils, well, they also capitulate to their crowd as well because they want to stay in power. And they usually vote on the side of the crazies on the other party anyway. So there you have it. It's just a losing strategy.
Yeah, I had some people approach me locally about joining in that effort. And so first of all, I told them, look, I'm a nonpartisan, so I'm not even allowed to participate because apparently there's taxation without representation if you don't believe in the two parties, which neither one of them are governmental entities. They are technically classified as clubs that independently run themselves with very little oversight from any outside entity. So I'm a nonpartisan. I didn't switch. That's just where my ideology is. I am pushing for a jumbo primaries with the top five move on and with ranked choice voting. That's where I am. But, you know, it's interesting you said about the candidates because my experience in running is that there are good people out there, but because of the control and the power that both parties have over their constituents, that it just truly is hard for the good candidate, and especially if you're not major party aligned, to go forward because you don't get the name recognition. You don't get to participate in any of the activities with the, you know, you don't get to participate with the Democrats. You don't get to participate with the GOP. So you're just kind of out there trying to, you know, do the best that you can, which is always a deficit. And then when you look at the major funders, you know, they're looking at dollars and cents and, you know, who's more likely to win. Well, historically, non-aligned candidates are the least likely to win. Ross Perot, I think, has done better than any non-aligned candidate in this country's history. And I think he got 18% of the vote, just 18. And he was a billionaire. So most of the non-aligned people, especially people like myself, I am definitely not a billionaire. So, you know, you're at that disadvantage. Now, I do agree. Now, I know you say that we put a lot of weight on black people, but I'll say this. Black people have saved the United States because black people needed to save themselves. Pick a war. We're the ones who won the war for this country, even before it was a country, in the Revolutionary War. Crispus Attucks, a black man, was the first to die. That's just how it's been. Women got the right to vote because black men under the 15th Amendment got the right to vote. We have always been the ones that pushed this country to be better than what it is and what it tries to be. And unfortunately for us, that is still the position that we're in. So this is not about saving them per se, but this is about saving us. So what do we have to do to save us so that we don't go in Gilead? Because once we're in Gilead, you know, the cause is no longer available to us to do anything but be slaves of the state in the fascist Christian state. And as a matter of fact, the interview that I was going to do today that I had to cancel was going to talk about the rise of white supremacy and racism and how it's impacted our local, state, and national politics. And Thomas, Brother Barry, we're the ones that influence it up or down. And I think, you know, from my perspective, let's acknowledge that who we are and the power that we have, but then let's learn how to exercise that power for our benefit. And let's just go ahead and acknowledge that when black people advance and do better in this country, the things that change for us, it's going to make things better for everybody that's downtrodden, just like it made it better for us. That just happens to be where we are and how the society works.
Well, I agree about if we do better, everybody else benefits. That's my argument for reparations, because we actually don't hoard money. Our condition is that we have to spend money, and we also are the group that are in the position where we don't have another country that we're going to send our money to. Our money is going to stick here in the U.S.,
say that again,
right?
Brother. Say that so again. The only place you can get African Americans is in the United States of America. Please put it in your own words. Say it again, brother.
Right. You know, so the money stays in this country. So it is a way to not only ignite the economy, but even on a national security level, it helps. It helps well. It helps create industries, the innovation that's being left out because black folks don't have the dollars to be innovative. There's plenty of ideas and things that we will be spending our money and time on to make this world better. So that's the thing that I feel like that separates us as far as even on a political scale. We only know this country. We're loyal to the country. However, the country is not loyal to us. The reason why I say it should not be on us so much is because we're the ones that consistently show up, consistently get nothing, and everyone knows it. And so it doesn't make sense that we always are the first to show up, but we're last to get dapped with any policy or what have you. Joe Biden, for our support, you know, remember it was him who said, if you don't vote for Joe Biden, you ain't black. Well, if you feel that gracious to say that to black folks, that, hey, being black is vote for Joe Biden, well, Joe Biden, you should have went to our community first. You should have gave us something for hate crime bills like you gave the Asian community. And these are not things that we're not saying that the Asians can't have their bill. They certainly can have their bill, but we know that they're not involved in politics as much as we are. We know that we vote for the Democrats at a higher scale than the Latino community do. And then, hell, we even outvote the LGBTQ community when it comes to politics. We mobilize more. And so with that being said, for our loyalty, there should be a lot more. So when I look at the responsibility, I always say to the party, Democrat or Republican, if you just came out and gave us what we asked for most of the time, and I'm not even just talking about reparations per se, even if we just talked about bills that give us permanent voting rights, right? Permanent Bill of Rights. If you gave us this permanency and stopped trying to delegitimize us at the polls and you signed that into power to make sure that we never have to go through this process or have to wait for, you know, things to expire, then I believe that that helps us. If we could get affirmative action restored back to 1965 measures, what Lyndon B. Johnson said, that's another thing that would help us. White women, gays, Latinos, Asians, people from continental Africa, that's not what affirmative action was for. That's not the intention of affirmative action. So if you want to help us out, just restore the things that we fought for, that we stood by and we went to war for in this country. That's the only thing that I say, brother. I do believe we should exercise our right to vote, but I do believe that in exercising our right to vote, we should be voting our own self-interest, and we have to tell these other groups, until you support us, we can't support you.
So I'm there. I'm with you. Is, you know, one of the reasons why we created the Black Leadership Summit was so that we could get our stuff together so we can do the things that you said. And that is incumbent upon us in this time of great distress and transition in this country, because we got a choice. Either we can do nothing and birth this very ugly baby that will bring Gilead to these shores of America, that will mean that there will be no one more oppressed than us. Or we can use, and what I'm saying is, let's recognize our power. Let's recognize our role that we have traditionally played, because that's the role that we play, and play it to the fullest extent, to milk it for all that it is worth, to advance us forward. A part of the interview that I was going to do with the paper was to show how white supremacy permeates through and racism through the, you know, politics on the GOP side. Not to say that it doesn't do it on the Democratic side, but it is the GOP right now that has this hard right leaning to fascism. You know, if the Democrats get back in office, that gives me a chance to live a little bit longer. Now, when I say live a little bit longer, I don't mean just eating, sleeping, breathing, and pooping. I'm talking about living where we're thriving and we're developing means to advance. Otherwise, we do everybody, including our ancestors, a disservice off of just surviving, because we are the ones that, you know, we're at the steering wheel. We're at the helm. We're the control in the direction. I'm just saying, let's control it that benefits us. I don't worry about other people because I know when it benefits us, they're going to get their share too. Oh, and just for the record, Brittany Griner is tied as the tallest basketball player in the world, actually, that's active. There's a couple more that is taller than her. And that depends on whether you go by her being 6'8 or 6'9. But even if you go by some stats that show her as 6'8, she's still tied for the tallest basketball player, active basketball player in the world. Then if you go with the height that they say she is now, because I don't know when that article is written, because she says she's 6'9". But, you know, they always fluff it up a little bit. But if you go by the 6'9", then she would be, I believe, the tallest basketball player in the world that's active right now. China has one that's tied, and I think there's one in, I believe, Australia.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, listen, I want to say this again back to Brittany, because sometimes people always kind of twist the message. You know, I want to see I want to see her home, because I know it is a political ploy. I'm just always thinking about the logical level of, you can bring Brittany home, but if it calls you two people of mass destruction to do it, are we willing to live with that price? And if we're willing to live with that price and we can do it, well, let's just do it. But if we're not having a collective conversation in this country on travel and how to travel better and not just be out and about and being mindful when things are happening, how we should move in this country, we'll have 10 more Brittany Griner before it's all over, because the behavior won't change. We'll just pull on the heartstrings, if you will, of the heart, and we'll be just moving emotionally. So I hope they do bring her home, but I did have to ask that question of, hey, if we have to let her out and the trade is the Merchant of Death and this other assassin, well, you know, I don't know. You know, is any athlete worth that?
Well,
I do believe LeBron James is worth it, by the way. He's a billionaire, and he.
Why LeBron get a pass,
though?
Well,
I would
why
say
LeBron
most
get
of
a pass?
Because
he's a dude.
You know what? And I'm glad people would bring that up. LeBron James, to me, when they say because he's a man, it's like, no, he creates industry. He's responsible for hundreds, if not thousands, of people having a job. He's also responsible for hundreds of scholars being educated. He is an institution all into himself. And when we talk about him, we don't need to talk about him as if he's just some other athlete, because he's invested back into American people, what we would hope all of these athletes do.
So, Thomas, that's a very interesting perspective. Look at it, because basically what it comes down to is dollars and cents. And when it comes down to dollars and cents, on the average, we tend to be at a deficit. So if we allow it to come down to dollars and cents in assigning value, because like out here in Las Vegas, if the police falsely kill a black man, that black man, max, tops out in court $250K, because that's what the police say. The life of a black man is $250K. But let that same police officer falsely kill a white man, and we up into a million or more. And so I just always
kind
of caution us.
How is that an equivalent?
Well, Brother Lee, let me tell you why.
Who said it was equivalent?
Brother Lee, let me tell you why, because we have that here. That's why I'm doing my app 12 watch. Part of it is that most of our people can't even afford to get lawyers that can afford to get detectives to go out and do proper investigations to make sure that they're doing a history on these cops to find out if these cops have killed people in the past. That's one thing. The second thing is, what is the borderline? Because most of our folks don't know. George Floyd getting paid, his family getting $27 million. Sent shockwaves here in Minnesota because before him, the payout, the highest payout for a black male who was murdered or a black person in general, I think was like $1.7 million. A white lady was murdered by cops 3 years before George Floyd, and they paid, and she wasn't even from the U.S., she was from Austria. They paid $20 million to her, even though if you watch the film, she did run out to the cop car in the middle of the night, and the cop, you know, he just shot because he didn't see, he didn't hear. You could look on the cam, he just shot. But with that being said, I'm not saying necessarily, Brother Rodney, it's about dollars and cents with LeBron and Brittany. I'm talking about what are you going to, you know, if we're going to say that the Merchant of Death can kill anywhere to 20 to hundreds of thousands of people, that's what he's going to take away. Who are you going to help sustain besides yourself when it's over if you are being exchanged for him? What are you going to do? I'm just saying that LeBron has more impact on more people more so than the money that he makes, the impact towards others that he's helping. I'm not even bringing on the basketball court. I'm talking about the other things that he do as far as the other businesses and industries that he's impacted in. And I don't like to equate dollars and cents, and even it's hard in this because we always say, well, if it was LeBron, and I say, well, if it was Serena Williams or Brittany, I say we'll get Serena before we would get Brittany, because Serena has another industry all into herself where she impacts more people per se than a Brittany Grimes. And I think on a government level, if you go by value, I think that's what you would value more than just the average or a celebrity. If we have to balance between two celebrities, would you put the celebrity that has a larger impact? If you had to trade for someone that's selling arms to terrorists?
Did we lose Brother Barry?
Yeah.
Are you still there?
No.
Yeah, he's still there. Yes.
Waiting your phone.
So I did want to just provide a little information. The biggest award for the death of a black man actually happened in California, and it was actually during Kamala Harris's time, and she was tied into not supporting the defense of the individual, believe it or not. And that was to a young man that was actually murdered by the Bakersfield police and actually lied. The young man had a gun. The young man was threatening. The young man was trying to break into an apartment, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the bottom line was the young man actually lived in the apartment. His mother got in the apartment. And when the cop says that the young man had aggressed towards him, what the cop didn't realize is that there was a camera that filmed it all. And during the case, the lawyers, and this is important to that money piece that Brother Barry was talking about, because the mother had enough financial wherewithal to afford a good lawyer. And that good lawyer was able to do what was necessary to get all of the incriminating evidence. And similar to Alex Jones' lawyer sending those text messages, they busted out the video that showed exactly what happened, and that the young man never resisted at all. As a matter of fact, when you see the young man on the ground, you see the cop on top of him, hitting him with everything he had in him. And the young man never, ever even tried to put his hands up to avoid the hit. He took those blows. And then in the process, the cop just pulled his gun out and then shot him dead. And the cop actually was not arrested initially, and there were no charges filed against the cop until his mother used her financial resources to push the issue and got, at the time, which I think was about 4 years ago, the largest award in the history, which was, I think it was $33 million.
Mm-hmm. So I think 33, and then George Floyd got $27 million for what we saw. Brother Lee, I got stories where, man, they done kicked in the door, beat a whole family. You know, shot a brother nine times and paid that man $999. Come on, man.
Lord have mercy. Look, Breonna Taylor.
And so,
that shot Breonna Taylor just got put up on federal charges. Let's see what that comes out to. But look, we have four minutes left in the show, so let's start wrapping up.
Well, I just want to say, with everything that we talked about today, it goes back to one thing and one thing only: awareness. What are you aware of? And also, what are you going to do once you're made aware of it? How you move in this society is important. And I would just like to see more of us be more politically aware, socially aware, so that we can make sure we're not spreading monkeypox, right? So we can make sure
right.
that we're not, you know, that we're not getting ourselves in situations, where we may be getting trade for the Merchant of Death. And I'm not saying it's to blame Brittany, because I don't think Brittany is the one that we should be pointing fingers at. I think that when we start talking travel, and it's something new, travel is something newer to black folks internationally than ever before for the masses of us, especially black women who seem to travel by themselves in most of these places. If you're not politically astute, you could find yourself in a Brittany Griner type situation based off of you ignoring politics at home and going abroad. So I would just like to see people just get more involved, more aware, and more importantly, I'd like to see us stop being such I people and become more we people.
Rodney?
Oh, man. First of all, big shout out to Brother Lee for coming to Las Vegas this week. Man, just totally dropped the ball on it. Sorry things didn't work out the way that it could have. They actually did bring some young people from the NADJ
community. I ain't even say nothing about that.
I got you, and I appreciate that. But, you know, that's just the type of dude you are. And that's why, you know, and when I transition from this life to the afterlife, why I want you to be one of the people who is up there on the podium talking about my life. And even if you have to mention this, that's okay, because what is the truth is the truth. Wherever that takes us. So big shout out to Lee for coming out and being a stand-up dude. Let me tell you, if I got to go to war, I don't want Lee with me, because I don't want him to have that possibility of getting taken out. But I tell you what, if we have to go, there's nobody else that I want in that foxhole covering my back. I mean, it's going to be like when I was back in my gang days, when me and Eddie would be back-to-back fighting on five or six dudes, because he and I were both martial artists. And that's how I see Lee. I put Lee on that pedestal with Eddie, because Eddie saved my life and I saved him.
Trying to make me cry, dude. Trying to make me cry. I'm at work. I can't be crying at work, dude.
Hey, it's just the truth. But that's what I got for you all. Remember, tomorrow's Purple Heart Day. Those people shed blood. And if you don't think that's a big deal, ask yourself, have you and would you?
I want to say this, you know. Through all this and this, it's been a pleasure to continue to build and learn from you all. I want to thank the sisters. I want to thank Angela for coming out. I want to thank the general for coming out. Two young ladies that joined us for shooting, one on time, the other one not so much, but that's okay, sis. I'm going to get you. I got you. And the brother, Doc came through just for shooting too. That brother's a good shot. I want to definitely spend some more time with him. So, you know, shouts out to everybody that came out, literally and figuratively. We got some shots in, so that's what's up. And I appreciate you all. And as we always do about this time, we love you in advance. And you can feel about it. Until next week, family. Peace!